Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we're joined by Frank Nothaft, Freddie Mac's chief economist. Frank, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me today.
My pleasure. I was looking over at your bio, and it looks like you've been with Freddie Mac for 20 years, and then I did a lot of research on Freddie Mac. It seems like a great company. There was one thing that was stated I thought was interesting. It looks like if you're an employee of Freddie Mac, you actually get a chance to get $12,000 for the closing cost of your first home, and that's entirely forgiven over the period of 5 years. Is that still true?
That's one of the employee benefits. I don't remember exactly the details of it since I've actually been a homeowner for many years now, so I haven't had a chance to take advantage of that benefit. But it is a signal of one of the things that Freddie Mac tries to do through our activities, which is to promote home ownership. And that's an important benefit for many families because it helps them on their way to creating wealth. And for your typical family, home ownership and home equity is the largest component of overall wealth.
I was looking at the mission statement of Freddie Mac, and a synopsis of it is, everything we do comes back to making America's mortgage markets liquid and stable and increasing opportunities for home ownership and affordable rental housing across the nation. I'd like to start our interview by covering those four ideals. First, market liquidity. Since Freddie Mac does not make loans directly to borrowers, can you explain basically how the system works to create market liquidity?
Oh, absolutely. Many, many years ago, if you turn back the clock to ancient times about 40 years ago or so, that's prior to the existence of Freddie Mac and the modern-day secondary mortgage market. What you had was situations where there would be big imbalances in the availability of funds for making mortgages across the United States. Typically, what happened way back in those ancient times, 40 years ago, was that banks and savings institutions would collect deposits from the local market that they operated in, and then they would turn around and make loans to consumers, including mortgage loans for homes. And if there was a big supply of deposits in one region of the country, a region of the country where home purchase demand was relatively weak, well, mortgage rates would be pretty low because you'd have a large supply of funds and very little demand for money. Whereas in another part of the country that was maybe growing rapidly with many young families, in other words, the West Coast, mm-hmm. You'd have maybe in some sense a shortage of available deposits or funds, yet a big demand for mortgage money to buy homes. And so mortgage rates would be really expensive in markets like that, typically fast-growing markets in the West, whereas there'd be a surplus of funds in slower-growing markets, especially in the East, the Northeast. So because mortgages were not liquid, that means they were really hard to sell to other investors at a price close to par.
Okay.
Then it was hard to transfer funds from areas where there was a surplus of deposits to areas where there was a deficit of deposits. And that's really what the secondary market really helps to do. We can buy loans in areas where maybe there's a surplus of mortgage loans or demand for mortgages, like in California, and we pay cash to the lender to buy those loans, and that replenishes the funds that lender has to turn around and make loans to home buyers, say, in California. And then we can sell off securities to investors, for example, in New England, where maybe there are excess deposits that banks are looking to invest into mortgages. So by doing that, we create more liquidity for the mortgage instrument and help to offset these regional imbalances. And therefore, we now today have a national mortgage market where mortgage rates effectively are uniform for the same product across the U.S.
No matter what the demand is of the local economy.
Exactly.
Okay, that's very healthy. What are some of the ways that Freddie Mac assists in first-time home ownership? What type of programs do you have for that?
We have a variety of products that we offer to those lenders who partner with us. For example, our latest suite of products is called Home Possible, and those are a suite of products that help to that offer very low down payments and higher debt-to-income ratios for those low and moderate income families who are looking to obtain a mortgage. And typically these will also be first-time home buyers because they're the ones who are more constrained in terms of coming up with the down payment and the closing costs on a loan and probably are stretching their income a bit more. So our Home Possible suite is designed especially for that type of borrower. And we make that available through that lending network that we have, the banks and the savings institutions and mortgage companies around the country who work with us. Another thing we do, and this is something we find very important, is that it's very important for consumers to be financially savvy. And so separate from our mortgage products that we make available to our customer base, we also have educational tools and curriculum that lenders can use to help educate the consumers that they are directly in contact with. And we have a couple of different educational materials. One of them is called Credit Smart, and we've translated it into Spanish and a number of Asian languages, too, Credit Smart Español and Credit Smart Asia. And this product helps to educate consumers on the importance of having a good credit history and steps that they can take to, set up, a household budget and stick to a budget and put some money away each month for savings in order to save up for home ownership at a later date. The second educational product we have is what we call Don't Borrow Trouble, and again, it helps to educate consumers on how to be wise about using credit and borrowing on credit, because we find that those consumers who have the best credit histories and have been able to make their debt payments on time will be able to obtain the lowest possible mortgage rates available in the market.
Well, that naturally brings up a subject that's been talked about a lot since January, and that's the word subprime. Since January, about 60 lenders have closed their doors. Is this going to spill over into the market that you fund loans in? And I guess I wanted to understand what makes a subprime borrower or a subprime loan? What's the difference between what you generally do and the subprime world?
That's a great question, and you're absolutely right. Freddie Mac directly purchases and finances prime loans. In fact, it's prime conventional loans. That's what we primarily are doing. We buy one at a time or groups of loans that are prime conventional loans. That's really our primary business. And what's the difference between a prime loan or a loan made to a prime borrower versus a loan made to the subprime borrower is primarily the credit score that the borrower has. If you have a very high credit score, you've demonstrated you've been able to be timely on your mortgage, your past mortgages, and your past consumer debt payments and whatnot, then you will have a relatively high a very good credit score, and that will enable you to qualify for a prime priced loan. Whereas if you've been delinquent or maybe even in default on previous credit obligations, credit card debt, automobile debt, maybe even a personal bankruptcy in your recent past, well, that's going to give you a pretty weak credit history score, because you haven't demonstrated the ongoing ability to make payments on time. And that will generally classify you as a subprime borrower. So we primarily finance the prime.
Do you think the subprime mortgage market kind of overdid it with its generosity? And do you think that's going to spill over and cause problems for the other products, the ones that probably had high FICO scores but not very much down payment?
Well, the underwriting certainly, in my view, deteriorated over the last 2-3 years. I think there's an important niche or segment of the single-family market that is served by the subprime loan products, and it's here to stay, too. You're not going to see the subprime segment suddenly vanish. There's an important segment and service to the market that's being supplied by subprime products and subprime lenders. And we see that at Freddie Mac as well, and that's one reason we have announced an initiative to develop and bring to the market before the end of the summer new secondary market subprime loan products, and we've committed to purchase up to $20 billion of loans under these initiatives.
I read that. Now, I was interested. It said that there was some criteria to it, one of which was you wouldn't be purchasing anything that was a stated income product. Is that accurate?
We're not going to buy any no-income, no-asset verification loans. Mostly it'll be full documentation. But in some cases where, for the borrower, in some cases where it's difficult to fully document the income. For example, maybe it's the individual self-employed or whatever. Then in those special cases, on a case-by-case basis, we'll go with the stated income application. But we're not going to do no documentation, no verification loans, the types of loans that some people in the press call the liar loan. We're
right.
not going to be financing those.
One of the reasons quoted as to why Freddie Mac was purchasing those subprime loans was to limit payment shock on borrowers. Could you explain that? Because let's say you buy an existing loan and it already has interest rate and terms established in the loan document. Do you have the flexibility, being Freddie Mac, to alter those to assist that borrower?
If it's a loan we originally purchased, and if the borrower gets into trouble, that's into some financial difficulty, and they appear to be a good candidate to go into our very active and progressive loan workout program, then we will work with the servicer and with the borrower to modify the terms of the loan in order to help that individual get through that temporary period of financial distress that they are under and bring them on back onto the road to recovery. It doesn't help anyone if the loan goes into foreclosure and the property becomes real estate owned. Everybody loses. The family loses, the lender loses, and the investor, Freddie Mac, also loses. Everybody's losing in a deal like that. So we will identify those cases where it makes most sense to really work with the borrower and the servicer to make sure that loan modification makes sense. But those are cases where we have purchased the loan directly.
Okay.
If we have not purchased the loan directly, then we don't have that ability to do so.
Okay. December 2005, Freddie Mac and Roper conducted a survey as to why people that were behind in their mortgage payments didn't respond to efforts to help them. I'm sure you're familiar with that. There was And I understand the people in foreclosure not responding because it's part of our business model at times to talk to them. And they're not the easiest person to get a hold of. Are you kind of familiar with that report? And
mm-hmm.
Okay. That group of people is really very difficult to even communicate to. Were you surprised by anything in that report?
Well, you're right. It is a challenge when people are under financial stress. It's something that, you know, they're working on trying to correct, but they also feel badly about the situation that they're in, and there may be other stresses going on in their family life at home that add to it as well. They may already be working two jobs, so, you know, they may be just difficult to reach to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we urge our servicers, but also just borrowers in general, is that if you are going through a period of financial stress, well, gosh, reach out to the loan servicer, reach out to your lender, tell them what you're going through, because really, it's in no one's interest for that loan to go into foreclosure. As I mentioned, everybody loses, and oftentimes the family doesn't realize that. But, you know, clearly the family's going to lose, but the lender loses, and the investor who owns the loan loses as well too. So it's really in the interest of everyone to be communicating, talking, and seeing if this can be made into a successful workout situation.
Do you think there's some confusion on the part of the borrower as to who actually is their lender? Because they take a loan out with somebody, and that paper is sold to someone else. And the reason I bring this up, this has happened 7 times in the last month in a California escrow company that we're familiar with. There was a sale that included part of the debt was one of the lenders that had declared bankruptcy. Those sales fell out because no one ever responded to a demand for payoff. There was literally no one to find to even fill out the documentation. So those escrows failed to close, and they end up being foreclosure. So somebody in foreclosure, their first contact would be a letter from somebody, and that's the servicer but not the lender. Does a servicer have certain powers that they've been given and some flexibility as to what they can do for the borrower?
Well, the servicer is acting as the agent ultimately for the investor, and the servicer may be the investor in the loan.
Okay.
I mean, that's very possible.
Okay.
I think what you described was, very unfortunate but unique cases that relate to what's happened in the subprime market where a number of companies basically went out of business in a short order. Something like, I don't want to say it can never happen in the prime market. That's much more unusual. Typically, the prime market does have well-established, ongoing institutions who currently are performing very, very well. Prime loans in general continue to perform very well. What the consumer should do is just contact the servicer. And again, the servicer is simply the person who they're making their payments to each and every single month. That should be their first point of contact.
Let's talk about the proclivity for homeowners to access their equity. You recently wrote an article where you talked about that even in the first quarter of 2007, the consumer that owned a home accessed equity at nearly the same pace as they did in 2006. Mm-hmm. Is that healthy?
Well, if you've had sufficient appreciation in your home and your home equity wealth has grown substantially so that you continue to have a nice home equity wealth buffer even after you tap into some of it and convert it into cash, then that can be perfectly fine and perfectly healthy. And what we find is that one of the primary uses of those funds that are cashed out as part of a refinance is for home improvement purposes. What does that mean? Well, that just means the family is taking out some of the home equity, converting it into cash through a loan, and plowing it back into the home. So they may be doing an addition to the home. They may be, you know, building a garage, adding a basement, or, I mean, finishing the basement, adding a bathroom, whatever they may be doing. And that creates value. So they're helping to sustain and support the value of their home through the home improvement investment.
Okay. In California, we're really not experiencing inflation of prices anymore. It's really not going up anymore. We track that on a regular basis.
Yeah, in fact, it's probably going the other way in a lot of communities.
That's correct. Now, as a lender, does that cause you concern because you're locked in at a certain loan-to-value ratio, and that creates an equity cushion and safety, and you have people borrowing equity and then also losing value? At some point, does that cause you concern?
Well, as an investor, it does. And just to clarify one thing, we are not a lender. We are in the secondary market, so we do, as you pointed out earlier, we do not make loans directly to consumers. So we are in the secondary market, and we buy the loans made by lenders.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right. One thing that we find very important as a gauge of the overall credit risk, that is the likelihood of delinquency and foreclosure, is the initial loan-to-value ratio. And in some ways, it's kind of common sense. If someone buys a home and puts very little down payment to buy that home, so the loan-to-value ratio is very, very high, and then unexpectedly the market or the economy turns and values fall a lot, well, they have no more, they may not have any home equity at stake in the home anymore. In fact, the home might be worth less than the mortgage loan. And then if on top of that there's, you know, the economy maybe is not doing well, you get unexpectedly laid off from work, well, gosh, if you no longer have your income coming in because you unexpectedly lost your job and the home value has fallen and is below the value of mortgage, you know, the only thing that might make sense to you might be to allow everything to go into default. So there's absolutely a direct linkage between original loan-to-value ratio and the likelihood or the probability of default and foreclosure on a loan. Now, one thing that's comforting to us here at Freddie Mac is that there has been, as you know, generally, a very large run-up in home values over the last 5-6 years. And it's true that in the last year, and certainly in Southern California in the past year, home values on average are down. They mm-hmm. are down. But what offsets that some of that risk for us is the fact that over the prior 5 years, home values doubled in Southern California. So even though values are down over the last year or so, there's been so much appreciation in home values prior to that that by far, you know, most families have a substantial home equity cushion. And the what we see in our own portfolio is that even though the average loan-to-value ratio on a loan we buy is 80%, so that means on average the family has made a 20% down payment on the loans that we buy.
Correct.
The average current loan-to-value ratio, factoring in principal pay down through amortization, factoring in the fact that home values have appreciated, the average current loan-to-value ratio on loans in our portfolio is somewhere between 55 and 60%. So you see there's a big home equity wealth cushion that has been created largely in the last few years because of home value appreciation that really helps to protect the loans we hold in our portfolio from default. Not to say none go into default. There are plenty that go into default. But it helps to insulate us from some of the broader risk.
Okay. We're about out of time for this segment. On the next segment, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about those percentage of homes that are in default and to maybe what extent that'll affect the ones that are okay, because I think they do have some ramifications. We want to thank you, Frank, for joining us, and once again, we will talk again next time.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.